Welcome to the podcast of MotorWeek, television's original automotive magazine. MotorWeek is made possible by RockAuto.com. Here's your host, John Davis.
And welcome to MotorWeek podcast number 63. Thanks for joining us here in Studio C. And around our table for this podcast, our road test producer and two-wheeling reporter, Brian Robinson.
Good day, John.
And good day, Brian. And our road test writer, Brandon Holthouse.
Hey, that's me.
And we're going to be taking up a variety of topics today, taking a look at the LA Auto Show, a new compact utility from Land Rover, something small and pretty cool from Kia, and we'll even dip into our MotorWeek mailbag as we usually do. But first, let's get things off with the Los Angeles Auto Show for 2011, really the beginning of the domestic auto show season in the U.S., followed, of course, by the big shows in Detroit and Chicago and New York. Okay, Brandon, you've basically done the most work on the L.A. Auto Show mm-hmm. coverage. What was the one or two really big deals for the average buyer that you saw there?
Well, L.A. Auto Show was a big deal, especially this year, because they had over 50 debuts in the whole show. But one of the biggest one was the Ford Escape, which is one of the highest-selling crossovers out now. And they gave it an update for 2013, kind of a new body. And
it's all new.
Yeah, it's all new.
I mean,
new.
It doesn't look anything like the box they had before.
Yeah, but they went way to minivan territory. I mean, it looks like a minivan.
Yeah.
Well, it's very much like the Vertec and concept and along the lines, I guess, of the new Explorer, except even a little more so. You think it looks more minivan-like?
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen it in person, but just from the pictures, yeah.
Pretty sleek looking.
Yeah.
A lot of new technology in it. Right. Actually, the thing I found interesting, they've done away with the hybrid. They're going to have mm-hmm. two EcoBoost turbocharged engines, which I guess will do better fuel economy than the hybrid did.
Right. They have also added in My Ford Touch into it, which they're sticking with. They're sticking with pretty hard.
It's supposed to be updated.
Touch. Yeah, it's supposed to be an updated on new My Ford Touch. So maybe that'll help them kind of boost up on the consumer reports that they kind of dropped in.
The long-awaited Cadillac XTS was shown in L.A. This is Cadillac's new big car. It's a front and all-wheel drive replacement for both the STS and the DTS. Neither car I think we're going to miss particularly, but this is the new big Cadillac. It's great looking, I think. It looks a lot like, you know, the CTS, but in a little bit more upscale looking vehicle. It's got a lot of new technology in it, and I guess this will fill out their car lineup until the new ATS comes, the compact, which I guess is next year. And so when you look at it, they'll have the CTS, the XTS, and the ATS, and they're going to have that's a very, very formidable lineup of vehicles for them. So we wish them luck. What else struck your fancy there at the LA Auto Show that you saw, Brandon?
Let's see. They had the new Fiat 500. How do you say that?
Abarth.
Abarth that I think you saw at
Hot Rod.
Frankfurt. Let's see, what else do we have?
Mercedes has the hot dog version of the ML63, the new mm-hmm. M-Class.
And Volvo showed off their C70 limited edition, which is only about 2,000 going to be made.
And what are we missing? What is the highest volume vehicle that they have all new at the LA show that we haven't talked about? The new Honda CR-V.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, here is it's a very interesting question. You got a new CR-V there. You have the new Ford Escape.
Yeah, and those both have been like number one and two last 10, 15 years.
And Mazda brought their new CX-5, which we've already seen. So three new and very stylish compact crossover vehicles at LA.
Sounds like a comparison.
Yeah, and I think it says a lot about the kind of competition that Honda's going to have, I think, with the CR-V. Because the new CR-V is pretty evolutionary.
Yeah, and they still are neglecting to bring some of the high-tech features not high-tech, but convenience features like push-button start.
Yeah.
It's not in the CR-V, which I'm pretty
That's
sure
surprising.
The other two
have. Yeah. The news that always comes out of L.A. is, of course, very green-oriented. Now, Honda did show the Fit EV there, but Green Car of the Year is another Honda, which a little bit of a surprise, I think, to some of us. The Honda Civic, which is all new this year, the new natural gas version. They're not calling it the GX anymore. They're just calling it the Honda Civic Natural Gas. And that won the Green Car of the Year Award for 2012. So congratulations to them. a little it's not exactly a mainstream vehicle.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't think they even sold them anymore. If you go out to L.A., you see them everywhere out there. So if you don't live anywhere near a natural gas filling station, which I believe a lot of people still do.
Yeah, you can get it. Practical. You can get those home filling stations, I guess, still. But yeah. We had one for a while when we had that GX in here.
It wasn't the most practical use, I didn't think.
But for a commuter car, people seem to love them. So, but anyway, they claim they're going to have much wider availability of them and that they will try and make them more mainstream. And after all, it is a fuel that we've got awful lot of.
What's the range?
I believe around about 200 miles.
Yeah, because we had the long-term one for whole summer. And you really I don't think the range was that good on that. You really had to contemplate where fueling stations were. It's almost like an electric car.
That's the same with all of these. Yeah. You brought up electric cars, but you're absolutely right. And it's going to be a while probably before they have that range to where people are going to feel comfortable about owning any of these alternative fuels as their only car. But at least natural gas, supposedly, we've got tons of it. So.
Yeah. Making more every day.
Yeah. More ways than one. A vehicle we just had here at the show that also made I wouldn't say a debut, but showed up in L.A. I think it made its U.S. debut in New York last spring. The new Land Rover Range Rover Evoque. Boy, it's a long name.
Yeah.
Those of you that aren't familiar with the Evoque, this is the latest attempt by Land Rover to build a compact crossover or SUV, whatever you want to call it. That in this case, they've taken it upscale away from Land Rover. They had the Freelander and the LR2, which were not particularly hits here in the U.S. And this has a lot more style, a lot of style, more luxury. And they make it in a very swoopy-looking three-door kind of coupish-like vehicle and a five-door. And so, guys, what do you think of the new Evoque? It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, you pretty much summed it up. A lot of style, a lot of luxury. When I first saw it, I was like, yeah, I wasn't really into it just because it's so different. I mean, a three-door SUV, I mean, no one's really building those anymore. But man, if you drive it, it drives so nice. It's like a comfortable BMW. It's got all the handling but without the harsh ride. And the interior is just over-the-top luxurious. We had, the top line and dynamic model, and that is beautiful inside. Gorgeous.
You know, it still has 8 inches of ground clearance plus, and it's got the all-terrain system. It's got a single-speed full-time all-wheel drive or four-wheel drive system. But still, it's pretty darn capable off-road, too, which even though most people probably will never take it there.
Yeah, but they made a point of maintaining that. You know, they feel they have an image to uphold there. Biggest problem with it is obviously pricing.
It's steep.
It's mid-40s just to start. And, the one we had in it was well over 50.
Yeah, you have to pay extra for, of course, navigation. You do get a big panoramic sunroof standard.
Oh, yeah.
Glass roof is standard.
Also have a standard power hatch, which I thought was good.
Right. Mm-hmm. I'm the exact opposite of the first impression that you had. I saw it and I was like, wow, that's pretty cool looking. I was like, that's really different. You know, the three doors, I wasn't expecting that. I like the design.
You're too
of
young
it.
To remember when those were the only SUVs you could
Ford
buy.
Ford Explorer.
Yeah. See, I'm not used to seeing that. So I really like that. I liked that it was different. But the price is definitely going to be a factor of people buying this.
I hope they've got the reliability where it should be. That's always been a stumbling block for a lot of people with Land Rover and Range Rovers.
Yeah, I think they've kind of gotten that. You know, the new Jags and Land Rovers, I think, are both a big step.
They've done very well with us.
Where they were, yeah.
Okay, let's move on to a more affordable small vehicle. This new subcompact Rio 5, as you can tell by the name, five-door, built on the same basic architecture with the same engine that the Hyundai Accent has. First impressions around the table. Brandon, let's start with you.
I really like the Kia Rio 5. It was very smooth driving. It is a small compact car, which is nice for a commuter. And it really does get you from where you need to go, and it's comfortable. It's a comfortable ride.
All right, I have to ask you real quickly. Now, you are a big critic of the Accent because you thought it was very noisy.
Yeah.
It's basically a car from their sister division. How did it strike you as far as noise and vibration control?
I still think the Accent kind of is up there in noise, and I think this has a better noise reduction than the Accent.
I thought it was a lot better.
Yeah.
Yeah, compared to the Accent, this one is definitely sportier looking and sportier handling. I wouldn't exactly call it nimble, but it does have it is fun to drive, surprisingly so. I think Kia is kind of another BMW reference for those of you keeping track, kind of becoming the Korean BMW.
I think what their aim is.
Yeah, the cars are very stylish and fun to drive, and they have a little bit harsher ride than some of the others in their segments. But the interior was very nice, driver-oriented. Again, BMW-like, a lot like the Optima midsize sedan, very similar layout to the interior. It's very nice.
I was my first drive home with it, and I was paying attention to the fuel economy because it's a small car.
Yeah.
And it didn't seem to be doing that well. And then I drove it all weekend. I basically couldn't go anywhere or drive it without coming back with like high 30s, you know, 37, 38, whether it was highway driving or city driving. And I'm thinking, you know, here, that's something, of course, that the Accent will do too. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, here's another stylish, nice-looking, you know, roomy, small car, subcompact or compact. And we've forgotten the subcompacts are much larger than they used to be. That's turning, you know, almost 40 miles per gallon in normal driving. And it makes you question about some of the more advanced systems in electric cars, where they're really going to be superseded just by less expensive technology using good old tried and true internal combustion engines.
Yeah, and taking a lot of weight out of cars. Everyone's making a big push, you know, a lot more aluminum.
Yeah.
Weight.
Now, I think that's something we've only begun to start seeing what's going on there. Okay, let's go now to this is always my most enjoyable part of the podcast, the lightning rounds, where we all get to 2 minutes to make a fool of ourselves, giving our opinions on some topic that's making the headlines. And when our producer, Michelle Parker, rings that magic bell, it doesn't mean come to the front desk. It means hush up, and we move on to the next subject. Here we go, guys. Do you think recent reports of fires involving the Chevy Volt are caused for alarm, or is the media just piling on? Now, let's talk about what we're really talking about.
Please, because, yeah, I'm not really up to date on this story.
This was not reports. This was a single report, and what happened was the government crash-tested one in a side crash. They let it sit essentially in a junkyard at their facility, and then it was some weeks later, like, you know, more than a month, that I guess some of the batteries, lithium-ion battery fluid leaked out and there was a fire.
Wow.
They did not report it. It was discovered by a journalist. There have been a couple of reports, apparently, of garage fires involving the Volt, but they weren't – so far have not actually been linked to the car. In other words, it could have been the electrical system in the garage or something. So the question is, this is, of course, the kind of horror story that, you know, electric car advocates don't want to hear. They were not able to reproduce this Chevrolet took cars, crashed them, and they couldn't reproduce it. So, is this alarming? Do the advocates for the car say, hey, all cars catch on fire once in a while? What do you think?
I would say if it's this one case, then and they couldn't reproduce it, that really tells you something. You can keep checking to see if this is a common occurrence. It doesn't seem like it is, but you know, it's still a good car. It does everything it's supposed to do as an electric car. And I think people are you're just learning this technology, so people are going to figure out stuff as it goes.
It wouldn't keep me from buying one, but it's certainly – I think it is a concern, especially for GM, because they cannot afford for this thing not to be 100% success. And they've already – I guess the Leaf is already outselling it, the Nissan Leaf.
At the moment, yeah, because they didn't have enough availability, but yes, that's correct.
They've got to get this thing right, but I'd say it's more of a concern for them than for buyers. I mean, people – we tend to forget. I mean, cars are dangerous things. I mean, we're driving around with 15, 18 gallons of gas – and right behind the back seat or underneath, you know,
right.
Cars are dangerous things that bad things sometimes happen to that sometimes you can control and sometimes you can't. I think GM definitely needs to stay on top of it.
Yeah, if this had been, and I think the first responders will probably be very interested in this. If this had been an instantaneous event as soon as the car was crashed, that would be a whole different kettle of fish. As it was, that didn't happen. So I'm sure there'll be more reports out there about something going on. And fortunately, there's not that many of them on the road at this point. Their sales are picking up. But, you know, there's big questions about what's going to happen to all these electric cars once the initial buyer frenzy is over. Yeah. Very good. Let's move on now to our Motor Week mailbag. And this question comes from Jennifer in Massachusetts. And Jennifer, we don't have a long enough show to answer this question, so we're going to give you a couple tips. What should you look for in a test drive? How long should it take? What questions should you ask? It just seems like cars are more complicated, and there are more considerations in terms of technology. Well, let's focus on new cars, and I'll start this off. You should do a test drive not on a weekend. You should do it during the middle of the week when the salesman's less rushed. And you should insist that the drive is not just around the block, but is out on the kind of roads you drive every day, which means a bit of highway. Never test drive a car in the wet. They always feel better. I'll stop there.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess I'll have to jump in then. Most of the stuff about, like, you know, how complicated they are and technology, you can figure all that stuff out by just by asking questions and learning before you go in there. I think the most important thing about the test drive is just, does the car fit you? I mean, you can look at all everything up, and you find out that's got this and the price is right, and you can get in a car and find it's like putting on a pair of clothes and trying them on before you buy them. It just doesn't fit you. It doesn't matter where you move the seat, where you move the steering wheel. You just don't feel good in it, and I think that's the most important thing you need to check out, because you know, you're going to have to live with this thing for a couple of years. Make sure you enjoy being in it.
I would say even before you take the test drive, do some homework and look around and look at the cars that you're interested in. See if you do want a smaller car. See if you want a crossover. And then look them up on the internet. Go to Motor Week's website and see if we've done a test drive on it. And see if we have anything that you didn't think of or a compartment that we found that you may not have saw on the test drive. So go in knowing a lot about it already.
And as far as the new technology, again, do your homework. Find out what's available on the vehicle. Look on the internet. I mean, the internet has so much information.
And it's all true.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, take a lot of it with a grain of salt. But if you're curious about some of the new telematic systems, we mentioned Ford MyTouch earlier, read up on what people are experiencing with it. And the instructions on how it works are on the internet. There's no reason for you to walk in to a showroom cold, and don't be rushed. You do not have to buy the car that day unless mm-hmm. you're desperate for transportation. Come back another day. If you do, you'll probably get a better deal anyway. Any more questions? Any more answers? Contributions? I guess that's it.
You're on your own, Jennifer.
Good luck, Jennifer. And we're going to wrap up our Motor Week podcast number 63. I want to thank our road test producer, Brian Robinson, and our writer, Brandon Holdhouse. Also, our audio engineer, who basically is always on the standby to make sure we sound clear, Jim Bigwood, our podcast creator, Bob Mixter, and, of course, our producer, Michelle Parker. For all of us at Motor Week, remember that Motor Week is now seen on almost all public television stations around the country, and also on the new Velocity channel that's on most of your cable and satellite stations.
PBS.org for full shows.
PBS.org for full shows. Basically, there's almost nowhere you can go that you can't find Motor Week.
Until
next time, you've tried to get away from it. I'm John Davis. For all of us at Motor Week, we'll talk to you soon.
You've been listening to the podcast of Motor Week, television's original automotive magazine. Motor Week is made possible by RockAuto.com. For additional information on podcasts, videos, and showtimes, visit our website at MotorWeek.org. And watch Motor Week, television's longest-running automotive series, each week on your local PBS station.